That'll help equalize
the voice crying out from the wilderness.
Do that in the bedroom, even.
Wow.
Ash.
Like, well, that's a perfect entree into the podcast.
No, it's not about bedroom talk.
Closer, well, closer, honey.
It's his on-stage voice.
No,
Ash.
Not there.
Failing the cover, Ash. No, because, I mean, really, the four of you, I really wanted to interview you during Valentine's Day, and the timing didn't work out. Mostly,
snow happened.
Snow, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. And mostly because I think it's so interesting. I mean, I met Eric first working at Portland Center Stage a million years ago.
Bat Boy.
Yeah, Bat Boy with Wade. Mm-hmm. Great, wonderful experience. And then, of course, as you know, I got to know you better. I began to know you as a choreographer, dancer, and your work at Body Vox. And then I met Daniel, and then I learned more about Body Vox. And then I read up, and I thought, wow, Body Vox is 20 years old. And Skinner Kirk is 19 years old. I mean, you guys are almost the same age. And I thought, well, it's really fascinating that I know you are very close friends and you're married. And are you guys married?
I'm married.
Domestically partnered.
Domestically partnered. Mm-hmm. Excellent. You know, and I thought...
Not a tax deduction category, but...
Officially.
Nonetheless, they tied the knot.
And so I thought to myself, you know, I'm really fascinated by how... You creatively, I mean, you're obviously dear friends. You have a shorthand, you know, emotionally. And I wonder how that is for you. I mean, you as a married couple, you as a domestically partnered couple, you know, how, I mean, I know for me, when I, because I'm a resident artist at Artist Repertory Theater, there are people I am in contact with by virtue of being here in the building that I am with, and things spark my work, and I get excited about, and that must just be, you're at home, I mean, how, your life is your work, and same, right?
Pretty mm-hmm. much, yeah.
I mean, I saw Nat's Farm, and I was thinking about maybe talking about that process first, because it was a piece, you know, that was your piece, and I wondered if with these guys, there was some relationship in building it.
Well, Nat's Farm began with a residency that Daniel and I received to go to the yard on Martha's Vineyard. And we were there for 3 weeks, and we were able to take four total artists. And
four total artists.
totally.
Well, we even speak at the same time.
Eric and I and a dancer, Vanessa Thiessen, and a musician, composer Tim Ribner. And you could choose whatever you want to be. You have your lead artist and then the other people. It could be a lighting designer, it could be all dancers. Most people would bring all dancers, but we really wanted to collaborate with Tim and create a piece that the music was being built note by note along with the movement. So it was really
so we had that experience and created this 25-minute piece in 3 weeks, and then we brought it back to Portland and added two more dancers, and we presented it as part of our Skinner Kirk show that was presented by Body Vox like 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
2 years ago.
It's just so interesting to me, all the people that you brought to work on the piece, were they all people you'd worked with in the past?
Tim, slightly. We'd worked with him on one project before, and he'd come in and done some layering of music on top of pre-recorded music and then some of his own music. But I first was aware of him when he was accompanying Josie Mosley's modern class, and he was just fascinating to watch because he just would sit there on a piano, and he all of these sounds would just come out of this piano, and it was plucking and hitting and banging and humming and, you know, and clanking spoons together, and he was just fascinating. So that's where my sort of admiration for his musical abilities came. And then, so then when we were looking for a musician, we found him, and then Vanessa Thiessen, we knew her from Oregon Ballet Theater, but neither one of us really worked with her. I mean, she was in the studio, and mm-hmm. but she was really young, and so she'd gone away for 15, 18 years, and then just all of a sudden resurfaced, and we're like, do you want to go to the Vineyard for 3 weeks? And she's like, okay.
And I guess that is what is piquing my interest about the four of you in particular, because when you work on a piece, and I know both Body Vox and Skinner Kirk, do these pieces that are very dense. They have a great all sorts of ways in their dance theater, for want of a better term. And what is usually how? I mean, your jumping off point can be anywhere, right?
Yes.
I mean, film. I've seen pieces at Body Box that employ film and music and people and things and art, and it's so wonderful.
One of the best things about it, and also the most unsettling, is that there is no one way in. So we don't have a formula, and we never know what is going to start a new piece. So we can't just pull out, you know, the cards and throw them down in the. Jack represents a jeté, and the queen represents a plié.
Although you could do that.
Well, you could. In fact, you could do that.
Actually,
that
sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, it's random, but that's exactly the way we would work. But so we don't have a formula. We let ourselves be inspired and utilize anything. And as such, sometimes you can think about starting a new piece, and you can say to yourself, well, what would I do? Where would I start? Because I don't know where to start. I never know where to start. And then
one thing that does start us off, though, is every year we have to design a season. And this is before you make anything,
before you have any concept at all. And our company manager, Una Lochran, will come to us and say, okay, by this date, we have to know what the next season is.
So we have and, some good
so,
titles.
Yeah, deadlines might be the catalyst for all great creations that happen at Body Vox. It's sort of like, get your act together by Thursday and it'll be good.
I think deadlines are a pivotal part of the artistic process.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah, it's and the then, seed that plants the seed.
Right.
You know?
You're shooting towards
and oftentimes, you know, we have to come up with the title of its
They're
season.
They're good for taxes and for art.
Yeah. But with that title, when you come up with a title, sometimes you just rely on that to sort of launch you into a whole new world. So usually our titles are... We think about those a little bit.
We came up with this idea last year. We had spent the previous year choreographing constantly. And we said to ourselves, we are not going to work this hard next year. We don't have three shows in us. It's too much. So we said, we're going to get other people to collaborate with us. And we'll just sort of package it and
Curated.
Mm-hmm. So we came up with this idea, this great title, The Pearl Dive Project.
I love that project.
Yeah. So we live in the Pearl District, so we thought and we're diving for pearls. So we'll collaborate with eight unique artists who have never choreographed before, but they'll do the choreography because they'll be so good. Well, it turned out none of them did any choreography.
That's not true.
They
had a lot of
career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they had ideas.
They were
the
visionary
steps.
Yeah.
So we ended up choreographing eight completely different pieces that had nothing to do with each other.
Right.
And so it was four times harder than making a normal show. So this idea that you would give yourself a break, it never exists.
Oh.
It's kind of like you guys were translators, right? I mean,
yes,
we're
exactly.
Enabling people to make dance that don't make dance.
Yeah,
we were pulling
yeah.
the language out of people who did not know how to speak
wow.
dance.
And they came in with most of them came in with a concept of what they wanted to do,
but then, you know, they don't know about dance. And so, you know, some of them say, okay, can we do something over here? Or some of them said, okay, we want to do this and it's about motorcycles. Go.
Or then and China Forbes came in and said, oh, I don't know, just do something like this. And she put David Bowie on and she started dancing in front of the mirror. And I happened to have recorded it. This little happy dance she did, I recorded it on my phone. We literally learned it step for step. It was like a 45-minute chunk of her just dance. She says, just do this. And we had the
second chunk.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great. She pretty much gave every step that ended up in that piece.
She did.
I'm curious, have you ever gone into a work environment that's a non-art environment and offered up the opportunity to choreograph or to put your dancers...
A non-what environment?
A
non-art.
Artistic, uh-huh. Sure, we've done workshops with people
uh-huh.
who are not...
You're not going to Wells
Artists.
Fargo and asking the tellers to choreograph?
Dancers.
So kind of like actors
going
to coach lawyers for
oh,
court
we,
and things
we
like that.
We had to do a whole workshop series with teachers who are elementary school teachers, you know, who don't do dance at all. But they were going to teach some kind of dance project. And so...
Yeah, and I just spent
the past month, four different days up in Olympia, Washington, teaching this group of kids that from a high school, a progressive high school called Avanti. And I mean, I think some of them had had a little bit of, you know, dance, but I would say the majority of them had not. And, you know, I put my head together with Ashley and we came up with all these really fun sort of movement-oriented games to play with them. And then I had them starting to create movement on their own by the end of the class. And it was really rewarding and very fun.
Yeah, to my mind, I just think it's really exciting to think about people having an opportunity to be with artists and make something. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think there's, you know, pour over, and especially in the political climate today.
I think the tragedy is those people don't think they have a creative life. And you have to remind them that they do. That they wake up in the morning and they decide what they're going to wear. That's a creative choice. You're going to cook breakfast or lunch, or maybe just go to a restaurant and choose what you want. Those are all creative choices. But for some reason, we've brainwashed a large majority of our culture into thinking they're not creative.
Isn't that interesting? Because then if they think they're not creative, then they think that the creative world is separate from them.
Yeah.
And therefore they don't feel connected to it.
I think you've hit on something really huge, especially in light, I hate that word now, but in light of our...
Did you know we're going to Gina pretty soon?
Wow, I thought that sounded like the gynecologist.
It does at Body Box.
Yeah. But the idea that, you know, the arts are a part of life and art making and being creative it's a way to solve problems.
Yeah.
It's just a way to solve problems and to be...
Or to create your nest. You know, what does your house look like? Where do you put the paintings on the wall? Or you want to put on some music. What are you going to play? What mood are you in? All of those choices are creative choices.
Right, and how they impact your emotional existence and your workplace.
But then the other side to that, the not-so-fun side to that is you could look at a proposal to get rid of the NEA and the NEH. And a broad swath of the public thinks that's a great idea because they're separated from the idea that art really is part of their life and is important. And that's a problem. That's a real problem. Because I think what you're saying is true. It is. They don't recognize it, but it is part of their life.
Your best business people are creative.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You have to be ingenuitive. Yeah. You have to have abstract thought. You have to imagine.
Innovative. You have to be able to bust the sides out.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have to be able to solve problems in a new way.
So we've developed a business workshop. It costs $17,000, we have to say, for creative people. No. I think it's a good idea, actually.
I do too.
Teach people, remind them they're creative.
Well, and again, coming back to the idea of you four being so very close, you know, my husband's not an artist, but I would think that if I was in a partnership with an artist, life partnership, that we would be constantly bouncing ideas off each other. Well, how about that? I mean, everywhere you go, even when I go out and see theater, I mean, I'm constantly thinking, how is it for you?
Do you guys ever in your kitchen, do you ever look at each other and say, God, we never stop working?
I mean, we are always like...
Don't you find yourself just saying that? And I mean, we say it frequently.
And then we pour the wine.
And then after a couple of glasses of wine, we start really kvetching.
That's when the work really begins. I mean... Yeah, when you live with the person you work with and create with, there's no way around it.
And we all wear three
different
hats.
We love each other. Unfortunately, we love what we do. So, yeah, we definitely take our work home with us.
We take it to another level, too, because we created children.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we've got the marriage, we've got the creative outlet with Body Box, and then we have the children, the poor children.
They're sort of our long project. They're, you know.
We always tease because, you know, we're physical people, and you're always hurting. It just doesn't matter. As a dancer, you've always got something. You know, your neck is out, your foot hurts, your ankle, your knee. It's constant. So we tune each other out pretty much. You know, it doesn't really exist. What did you say? I didn't really hear. Your knee hurts?
She'll say, God, my neck is really ginched. And instead of me going, oh, honey, where can I rub that? I'll go, yeah, I know my knee, my bone spurs are really acting up.
It's like, or how about, yeah, I could really use a gin. Yeah.
Or it's more like this, oh, my neck really hurts. How long do I cook the chicken? It's, like, yeah, it's more like that. But the tragedy is my children, who also get injured and banged up and cut and bruised and trips to the hospital, we are very tuned out on them as well. You know, Julian had a crash at gymnastics yesterday. He did a double front and hit the pit on his neck, you know, and he's hurting, and I'm terrible. I just completely forget about it, you know, until he comes down in the morning and he's like, Dad, my neck. And, okay, that's right.
That happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, something's hurting? Right.
That's,
okay.
It's interesting. I'm not sure if everyone who listens is an artist, and it is really interesting about your bodies and what your bodies really have to do and how to maintain your health, and because you are in constant pain.
Yeah. This group here, we are veterans in Body Vox. There's obviously another generation coming in underneath us. And you won't hear us talk about our injuries. Maybe personally at home we talk about it, but you never hear it in the studio. It just never comes up. But that next generation, you know, they've got a sinus infection and their foot hurts and their rib is out and stuff, and they are all about the complaining, and we just look at each other.
We all roll our eyes.
They're
all like, I cut my toenails too short. I have to sit down today. Like,
and we look at them and go, you idiot, we don't have cartilage in our legs.
I'm not even human.
Jimmy is the bionic man. That's true.
Oh, that's
he's had so many joints rebuilt.
Oh,
we actually own that game ready ice machine. I know.
But like our generation, when we were growing up, everybody was telling us to suck it up. You know. We don't care if you hurt. You know, like when we were in the ballet company, they didn't want to know.
Yeah.
You
the
just
show went
as
on.
Long as you did your job. You know, you if you had a sprained ankle, whatever. I mean, if it was bad enough that you had to take yourself out, that was a risk that you had to take because you may not get another chance to do it, you know, at a role like you were going to do. But I think the younger generation is more, you know, I don't want to use the word coddled, but I mean, I think that they, you know, they're like, oh, you're hurt, you know, okay, how do we, you know.
It's kind of an interesting happy medium because on the one hand, you want to be in communication with humans about what their experience is in their physical body, especially in dance, but I know in my work too, but there's a fine line. It's when does it take over?
Yeah, and maybe we're taking it to an extreme, like, I should sit down. You know?
Yeah. Sit down.
No,
right?
We've had occasions where dancers have not been able to perform. They've taken themselves out of performances. And these guys, I've watched these guys step forward and replace them, you know, and I know that really is extra work for them. Mm. It's a different mindset with the new generation. What's the matter with kids today?
Dancers are different than athletes.
Yeah.
Athletes, when they get a slight twinge, they're sitting down and their guys are all over them, icing them over and stuff. Even the you know, most sensitive dancer will dance through stuff that no athlete would ever dance through. Dancers will dance on broken bones.
Oh, it's so amazing.
I mean, they will.
I mean, amazing is not maybe the word. I mean, it's insane, really.
Yeah. It kind of is.
You know, but I don't know.
But they're doing it for love and for the feeling and communication.
Right.
And, you know.
We had a dancer just break his hand about a month ago and had pins set in it. And the day after he got his pins out, he had to do a show. So he did. Came in, did a show, all the grips. Said, that's fine.
We were all making fun of him. Said how fat he had gotten. Because his hand was swollen.
Looked like a sausage.
Jeff, you've really gained weight. It's terrible. You really need
your pinky
slim.
Is huge.
Your pinky is fat.
I think we've all been through that. You had a broken nose on stage and a black eye recently. And
you did.
Oh,
wow.
Just look at it now. Can't you see it?
Gee whiz.
No, I mean, my nose broken 3 times.
Have you?
On stage.
Not on stage. Once on stage.
Wow.
Twice in rehearsal.
Yeah. And you kept dancing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was kind of interesting because we were in the middle of a piece and I got whacked in the nose and I heard it crack and I was sort of stunned for a second, and then it felt like I couldn't tell if it was bleeding or not, but all of a sudden I kind of felt like this tingly kind of trickle on my nose, and then all of a sudden another dancer looked at me and their eyes just got huge. I was like, bleeding.
Audience is wondering, wow, is that an effect? What the heck?
You know, the audience doesn't know. That amazes me.
I know.
I've seen gushing blood on stage, and the audience doesn't even know what's happening. We had a dancer pop her chin open, lacerated her chin like this, and we were sort of upside down in a shoulder stand for a while. So the blood dripped along her chin and up the side of her face like this. And then she spoke to me as we were in our shoulder stands and said, Ashley, I think I have to leave the stage. I'm really bleeding. And so she left the stage, and Jamie came out and did this ridiculous duet with me that was supposed to be two women. We improvised the whole thing. And then she came back out, and she had a giant paper towel and gaff tape on her chin, black gaff tape. That's all we had, because she was gushing like that. And nobody knew. How could you not know?
You know, it's so funny because I have fallen down on stage in such a big way. And my husband was in the audience, and I, you know, come off stage and backstage and said, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I just fell flat on my ass. Oh my God, that was so humiliating. Uh-huh. Oh, I thought that was part of it.
Yeah.
Well, you learn to like go move through it.
Yeah.
I got knocked out on stage, completely knocked out cold, like laying there in a puddle. Yeah.
Then the doctors came backstage and shined flashlights in her eyes, and they wouldn't let her go on for the second act. We had to re-choreograph the whole show at intermission.
Weenie.
Yeah.
I know.
She was like,
such a wimp.
This is probably the only podcast that we've talked about this level of injury. And so maybe that's a part of the fact that you guys all love each other and you just really talk about everything under the sun together.
Yeah, there's nothing that doesn't get talked about.
Well, in the dance world too, I bet. It's just the body is your instrument.
We're so intimate. Yes, this thin layer of clothing that divides all of our little bodies from each other.
That's right.
Sometimes I call them my second husbands. I know.
Yeah, every man in this room is her husband.
I know. I've been on stage with these men when they have actually motorboated me in live performance. You know, be doing some lift, and I happen to have a bigger bust than a lot of other dancers, and their face passes right through my cleavage, and I'll hear this.
See, this is the kind of stuff I was hoping to hear.
This is going to sell. This podcast is going to sell.
I was thinking she was going to edit this out, but no, I think she wants more of this.
No, there's no holds barred.
And the nice thing about dancing with these people that I know and love so much is we poke fun at each other, and you know, we'll be in some embrace, you know, and if the muffin top is right there, you get a good squeeze on it, just tease them, or you get the... you know, while we're performing, it just brings everything to another level of intimacy.
I would bet, I mean, I've seen, you know, you on stage together. I've seen you on stage together. I don't think I've seen you on stage. No, yes, I have. But it's the dance.
Darn it, you just don't remember it.
No, it's so interesting because there's a beauty. I mean, I'm a total dance fan, and just to see the bodies in contact, it feels, and I'm sure, because, you know, I go to a lot of dance events, and since I'm not a dancer, I project, they love each other. I mean, you see these relationships on stage that just play out so beautifully, mm-hmm. but I'm sure there are many times when the people who are dancing don't love each other at all, and then they make it work.
Well, I think people do make it work, but there's something besides just your relationship. I mean, Eric and I have been dancing together for 28 years. Mm-hmm. Jamie choreographed a piece at the ballet in 91 that I was in, so we've had a kind of working relationship. We've all worked together since 97.
Seven, yeah.
And I feel like no matter what happens on stage, we don't even have to really talk to each other. I mean, those things have happened. I know for a fact that something can go wrong, and we just move into those places. And yeah, I mean, anything can happen. We've toured the world, and everything has happened.
But even if people are having a bad day and we're cranky with each other, it never comes out on stage. I mean, everybody has good days and bad days in the studio and things like that. But
I think, though, we've been very careful about picking the people we work with. Mm-hmm. And that takes years of experience, and we have worked with people long ago who didn't have a good symbiotic relationship with us, mm-hmm. and so you would have attitude situations that we had to manage. Mm-hmm. And now, I think as a foursome, when we do auditions, when we accept a new person into a company, it's a group effort, we all look at the personality as well as the technique and the versatility of the person. And what makes a great Bodybox dancer, a Skinner Kirk dancer, is a person who is a great team player. Who that, you know, when the cards are down and you get kicked in the face, you toss them the football and you run off stage. Okay, go.
Well, that's interesting because actually that speaks to what we spoke about earlier about the dance theater. I mean, you have flexible performers who are open to myriad ways to get to the dance, you know, and that is just stunning. It really makes the work so much fun to watch. So I know you have a show opening next week, right?
A week from tonight.
Yes?
Yeah.
Tell us about where and when and the whole thing.
Well, it's at the Bodybox Dance Center. Mm-hmm. Bodybox is presenting Skinner Kirk. We are doing a brand new work to all Elliott Smith music. Mm-hmm. It's going to be danced by 5 men. And the music is going to be played live with a 4-piece band, and a female, Catherine Feeney, is going to be singing Elliott's music. Nice. And yeah, it's an hour-long work, mm-hmm. and we're right in the throes of it, and we just came from a 2-hour rehearsal, and there's a lot to go, but at the same time, I think we're in a good place.
Tickets available at bodybox.com.
Yes. So we're really excited about it. We have a really great group of dancers, and I think it's going to be a fun evening.
Nice. Do you have any special opening night festivities?
A good night's sleep.
We'll have an opening night.
Yeah,
opening night, we usually do what we call opening night club, which is our donor circle. We'll get together and we'll have a reception for them. That's pretty much.
Ashley and I get to host dinners before their show.
Yes.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Yeah, we get to cocktails and really good food, so we can eat before the show, which we never get to do.
It's really nice, I think, to remind people how participating in the arts really gets you up close and personal in a way. I mean, to share the work, to go see a show and buy tickets is fantastic, but, you know, become a donor, a sponsor, and you can see the process up close.
That's right.
It's kind of fantastic.
Yeah. Right. Their dancers are amazing, too. You should talk more about your dancers. You have this fellow that came from Shen Wei. He's one of the founding members of Shen Wei, which is this amazing, very famous, world-famous company in New York.
Uh-huh.
And what's his name?
James Healy.
James Healy. Yeah. He's fantastic.
And he's a beautiful mover. He just moved back to... He's from Southern Oregon and just moved back maybe 3 years ago.
Wow.
And is teaching in town. And yeah, we just approached him and said, we kind of sight unseen, but I'd seen him dance once before, and I'd heard many people speak highly of him, and so I had a meeting with him, and he was interested, and so he's joined us. Brent Lubert, who is a featured dancer in Bodybox, beautiful dancer, and then we have Chase Hamilton, who's a local lad who danced with Bodybox 2, and Polaris, and has danced around town,
dance.
And Top Shake Dance with Jim McGinn, and and then the two of us.
That's wonderful. And then you've got a new season coming up.
We do, and
it's
we're also.
Deadline.
That's Una calling.
Actually,
right
that's a great name for Bloody Fox.
Deadline.
Exit, deadline. We got to do that.
Where are we? See, you just heard
the
creative process.
The deadline.
You were there.
Yeah. Come see Deadline.
Tickets on sale at Skinner Kirk Performances.
I totally forgot what I was going to say. Oh, we have a show this Sunday. We are performing. Jamie and I have been asked by Neil DuPont of the Symphony.
Oh, I know about this.
Yeah,
piece.
Who has
really
collaborated
great.
With Intel to compose a piece of music, and Intel has developed these motion-sensitive devices, chips, that we will be wearing. We look like we're on house arrest. That we wear them on our ankles and our hands. We can't leave the theater without setting off alarms. And we will be doing a duet to open or the second piece of the children's performance this coming Sunday.
Great.
At the Arlene Schnitzer
Concert
Hall.
Oh, darn, because the podcast won't be on until Monday.
Oh, well,
we did on Sunday was this amazing piece
and
of
cheering house.
Standing ovation.
Oh, that's right. It was truly
that's
amazing.
That's because it was outdoors and
there
was
no
chairs.
You were great.
I was. Oh, I was fantastic.
Another great title, I was. I was.
I was dot, dot, dot.
No, I think of, here's a funny thing. People always ask us, because we are in the upper echelon of age for dancers, is, are you still dancing? Are you still dancing? Still? That's my favorite word, still. Yeah. Well, I'm going to do a show, an entire show called Still.
Still here.
You could look up the song I'm Still Here by Stephen Sondheim and, you could dance to that. Oh, my goodness, yeah, well, I've seen you dance, and I would never ask you that in a million years.
Oh, thank you.
Not in a billion years.
Thank you. I'm going to sing that thank you to Susan Amars.
Please keep dancing.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
The work you do is beautiful and exciting and innovative, and it's just
painful.
Great stuff. Painful.
Torture.
But we never know that.
That's right. You don't know that.
We think it's a delightful physical experience for
probably you. What we need to do is sometime just put a tiny, lovelier microphone and just do an internal monologue the entire time while we're dancing. Like, oh, my God. it really hurts. Oh, jeez.
People do not want
Eric,
to hear
are you okay? You're bleeding.
Wow.
There's a lot of conversation
Eric,
on stage.
Oh,
we
Eric has no qualms turning to me and saying,
yeah. I like to make fart noises.
Yes,
with your mouth?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's be clear, listeners. Only with my mouth.
You can make them with your armpit, though. This mysterious no hand assist armpit fart. There it is.
See, leave it to a dancer to make noises. That was his armpit.
That was,
Hands-free armpit farts.
Yeah.
It's a talent.
I really appreciate you coming in because, as I said, I mean, you can just get, the listeners can hear the love you have for one another, the work you do. It's really, what's that word?
Are you saying we have to leave now?
No. It's contagious.
Because we're having fun.
Keep talking.
Well, you're a princess to tolerate us.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Like I said, every time I see your work, I think, it seems like a really wonderful partnership that you have. And the one question I didn't ask that I was curious is, how do you turn it off? I mean, when you were talking earlier, take a vacation, or is that the way? Do you put a kibosh on the work talk?
Never.
I do sometimes.
Never. You do?
I'm just like, just leave the studio.
We will go on vacation. Mm-hmm. We play hard on vacation, though. They're not very restful.
We come back really sore.
We don't know how to rest.
We ski. We go skiing. We go hiking the Grand Canyon. We go, where do we go?
We come back. Thank God we can
surf,
rest now in rehearsal.
Yeah.
Daniel and I go to the beach and sit on the beach and drink beer.
There may be tequila involved.
Maybe a tequila.
Oh, my God. We should end this whole interview with a beer. That sounds so good. Body Vox's sponsor, Bridgeport Brewery.
Is that for real?
It is.
For real. We're the only dance company with a beer sponsor.
Aww.
You guys should have an emergency room sponsor, just for the
interview. We should. Kaiser.
Urgent care.
Yeah, urgent care. Zoom.
Zoom care. Sponsored by Zoom care.
What we really need is a sponsorship by Advil.
Yeah.
Oh,
performance brought to you by the makers of Advil.
Well, that's for sure.
I think we sponsor them, so it's about time that there's some turnaround.
That and French's mustard.
Yay.
Okay, French's mustard.
Oh, it's a fantastic instant cure for cramps.
Oh, you know what?
Leg cramps.
Yeah.
If you wake up in the middle of the night with a nasty cramp, French's mustard is the cure.
But not on the muscle.
Whack!
No, in your mouth.
No, on the muscle. No, right,
one night,
and
I got a
nice
slathered with the now.
Nice Dijon,
Dijon won't work.
It will not work. You have to get the worst mustard.
Yellow. It's the best.
Because it's the turmeric and the vinegar, and there's whatever. It's a delicate mix, but it's the French's is the one. And one night, we got up. I woke up with a terrible cramp. And I mean, I get this one that's so bad that I've even passed out from it before. And so
a dancer saying they're passing out, that's not a normal human.
How imagine that you wake up so you can pass out? What the hell is that?
I'd rather not.
Run down the hall so you're in mid-flight.
But when I passed out, I hit my head on the wall and the cramp went away like that. So that's the other quick cure for a cramp. Bash your head into the wall.
I've got a leg cramp.
But I woke up in the middle of the night with this terrible cramp, and I'm hobbling around the house, cursing and trying to do Lamaze breathing, and Eric's running around like, get me water. And he got the French's mustard out, and he unscrewed it. And you know, you get the little unscrew cap, and it's got that dried up piece of goo on it always. So he's holding over my mouth, like squeezing it. And I'm like, do it, do it. He's like, I'm trying to. And suddenly the little, like, heart thing came. And it was like a mustard bomb. I got, like, half a cup of mustard down my gullet in one chug, 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 chug. But that cramp was gone. It was gone. I was like, okay,
that's
done with
the,
that. Let's go back to
that. That's the new magic word of the day, mustard bong.
Mustard bong.
Never heard that one.
Yeah.
Don't try that at home.
Or do. If you're prone to muscle cramps, highly recommend.
Well, thank you so much. And everybody, get over to bodyfox.com and buy tickets and see shows and dance around your house for fun.
Yay! Thanks, Susanna. Thank you.